Welcome, everyone. I am Andrew Thompson, General Manager of CFMG Capital, and I'd like to welcome you to the fourth episode of Smart Capital. We're always looking for new ways to communicate with our growing community of investors to keep them up to date with the latest happenings at CFMG Capital and the world of wealth generation and property. We started the Smart Capital podcast as a forum for all sorts of discussions and to provide some insight into how we might approach investment management and the opportunities that we see. Each month, I'm going to be inviting a different guest to have a chat about their area of expertise to help you on your journey to some financial freedom. This week, I've got a guest by the name of Matt Bell. Matt is the Chief Economist with property services company Oliver Hume Property Group. He's been an economist for more than 20 years and oversees Oliver Hume's economic coverage and land market insights. Prior experience includes senior roles, including head of strategic advisory for Colliers, various roles at Stockland, including head of strategy and research, and group research national manager and chief economist at Australian Property Monitors. This episode, we want to provide some insight into the status of the Southeast Queensland land market. CFMG Capital currently has eight active projects across this market, stretching from the Gold Coast all the way up to Nambour on the Sunshine Coast. And while each of these projects is subject to their own local factors, a healthy overall market across the region is critical delivering projects on time and on budget. So before we dive into a discussion, I'd like to welcome Matt and just get Matt to tell us a bit about yourself and your role.
Thanks, Andrew. Great to join you. As you mentioned, most of my career has been focused on the resi property sector and within that mainly vacant land. And mostly I spend most of my time coming up with forecasts about what's next or where to from here. Part of that is understanding how the macro factors drive markets, but it's also, you know, talking to colleagues and people on the ground about what's happening with customer preferences, what's happening with product changes, and whether that be land sizes or built form. So great to be here to talk about the Southeast Queensland market.
Thanks, Matt. So I guess we'll just dive into a few questions to get us going. I guess what's your data that you're seeing at the moment telling us about where we are in the land market cycle, particularly in Southeast Queensland?
Yeah, Southeast Queensland, a very interesting market. I mean, it's not hard to take the view at the moment that there's significant growth in volumes and prices coming when you're at the, you know, the start of a rate cutting cycle. But Southeast Queensland has been a really strong performer really over the last 12 to 18 months, and that sort of changes things a bit. We've seen pretty strong sales volumes and really strong price growth over that time. And the challenge with SEQ is how to transition from that really rapid growth to, I guess, a more stable growth market. I've seen various views out there of where we are on the property clock. Some saying 10 o'clock, you know, as in approaching the peak of the market, I guess. But I think there's probably some more upside than that. Queensland has performed really well and there's you know, strong drivers behind it, has been for the last 12 to 18 months, and none of those are really significantly changing.
Yeah, I mean, look, my journey in property over the last 20 years certainly I've witnessed markets, particularly in Melbourne and Sydney, have what I would call boom cycles or extreme cycles, whereas working through the Queensland or Southeast Queensland market in that period, I've always felt like we just sort of follow behind but have like that more linear growth, not those massive spikes. But certainly the most recent 2 years feels like we've probably followed those markets a little bit and had a much bigger growth cycle than perhaps we have in the past. And what do you think, I guess, is driving that demand compared to other markets in the most recent years?
Yeah, I'd agree with you there, Andrew. It's been, you know, probably a standout performer over the last couple of years. I think, you know, one of those reasons is undoubtedly that being really the only state with significant amount of, you know, interstate migration helps. It means there's plenty of underlying demand that's not just driven by overseas migration, which really Melbourne and Sydney and some of the other markets are dependent on. Some of it comes down to a bit of a lack of supply. You know, Queensland is doing okay in terms of volumes, not knocking it out of the park. You know, some of that is really a bit inability to get the required lots in terms of detached housing in some key markets. Gold Coast being really the prime example there, right? You should be delivering 600 lots a year, probably delivering less than 400 and not looking really strong in terms of available land. So if you've got land there, the outlook is very strong for price growth, and if you can get the volumes out, you'll sell them quickly. Probably also, you know, in terms of what's supported the market, is that Queensland has really struggled in terms of delivering the competitor attached product. So, you know, there's significant amounts of apartments and townhouses needed to get that housing supply going, and when you don't have that coming to market, it just makes the attached market or the vacant land market all the more stronger.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some of the interstate migration perhaps is driven by a desire to perhaps get into a more affordable market, but also into a more traditional product, the house and land package with a backyard. And in the Queensland market, certainly in Southeast Queensland, some councils are a little bit behind on that sort of product development and more attached product with amenity around it. But I guess there are a lot of broader economic, social and demographic trends that are impacting the market. I mean, what does your research tell us about the changing expectations of the buyers?
Yeah, it's a good point. You made a good point there, Andrew, about that affordability. I mean, Southeast Queensland has had that affordability advantage, certainly in vacant land, but in most resi markets over somewhere like Melbourne. And that's probably changed. On our data, we had March being the first quarter where the vacant land price for Southeast Queensland exceeded that, or that headline price for Melbourne. I mean, you take, you know, incentives and rebates into account, it's probably well above it now. You're seeing some pretty strong price growth in Logan, Ipswich and Moreton making that happen. But, it, you know, in terms of those, some of those broader trends, you know, buyer expectations can be hard to change. You know, we see in some of our markets where there has been really strong price growth over the last 3 or 4 years. In an extended family, one element of the family has bought a 422 and a 450. And really, you know, 4 years later, that's really in a townhouse apartment price. So we do think that you probably need some of those expectations around what, you know, what you can afford for those similar budgets to change. And really, it's hard. It doesn't happen quickly for that attached product. That said, we still, you know, there's still a lot of demand around for that detached product. I mean, we long-term density is a big part of the solution, but in the meantime, still a lot of customer demand for vacant land and detached houses. So, you know, that said, what we're seeing in markets around the country is that because of those affordability pressures, you know, you need some of that innovative townhouse and medium density product to come to market that was going to fill that hole, certainly the first home buyers.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's, you know, it's the age old problem. For as long as I can remember, the sales consultants on the ground on land projects have customers coming in. What are you looking for? I'm looking for an 800 square meter block. What's your budget? 250 square meter block. So I don't think that's ever going to change. Educating those buyers on what their affordability or what their buying power can actually get them versus what, you know, we all want something bigger than what we got. But also, I guess, that sort of the attached product, the innovative stuff that some developers are doing, as well as what I'd call traditional townhouse product, a lot of that, just due to the nature of the market, just gets snapped up quickly by that interstate investor market, because they're quicker on the ground. They can do deals quicker. For some developers, you know, it's not a space that we play in. We're pretty much just vacant land. But certainly in organizations I've worked for in the past, they almost exclusively sell that innovative product designed for first home buyers to investors. So it's actually harder for the first home buyer to get into the product that's really designed to suit them.
That doesn't surprise me. You know, we've seen around the country that being reflected in the lots that are titled that sit there on the market for a while tend to be the larger lots now, just because they're priced accordingly. And you're right, those either smaller lots or townhouse lots are going quickly. You know, Queensland for us on our numbers, we've got Queensland sort of average land size around, or Southeast Queensland 420, you know, compared to a more 360, 370 in Melbourne. So still some opportunity up here to get that product out there to market, but it also depends on, you know, councils being more open to supply that, the zoning and the approvals for those. We have customers come to us and say, you know, we're getting a lot of inquiry from first home buyers, but our price points aren't hitting it. What can we do? And the answer sometimes is just, well, not much if you haven't got the approvals for the right product, and therefore, you know.
Oh yeah, look, absolutely. I've got a project in Logan, it's about 30 lots, and the minimum, due to the zoning of it, the minimum lot size is 500 square meters, and you have to average 550. So you're not going to be delivering anything affordable in that particular project, and there's not much we can do about it given the zoning.
Yeah, and hopefully that changes, right? I mean, when we talk about changing policy landscapes and what can governments do and all that sort of stuff, I think there is a large overarching move towards the recognition that, you know, we need, but, you know, more innovative product, and affordability matters more than necessarily aesthetics and matching what's already out there in the market. But that, it doesn't happen quickly, and it probably needs some more, I guess, higher level incentives for local governments to speed that up. But it never happens as quickly as it needs to.
Yeah, I mean, there's two factors there in Southeast Queensland. One, a lot of this product is most suited to the inner ring of the city. If you go to Sydney and Melbourne, for example, those inner ring suburbs are lined with terrace-type product, terrace homes that were, in some cases, built over 100 years ago, so they were way ahead of their time. In Brisbane, the inner ring suburbs are just big, sprawling mansions. And if you want to get into that type of product, you've got to go sort of 15, 20 Ks and beyond to get into that terrace-style home. And of course, if you're out that far out of town, the amenity is not like it is in the inner ring. So Southeast Queensland's a little bit behind in its, you know, overall planning scheme for the region as a whole, where these, you know, attached products, innovative stuff. When I say innovative, like I said, it's over 100 years old in those other major capitals, but we do have it a little bit backwards in the sense that we're delivering this stuff in the outer rings rather than the inner rings.
That's right. And customers, when they are forced to go to those outer rings, their expectation is not that they're going to have to buy attached product that far out. You know, they you think you're going out that far, I'm going to get a house and land sort of thing. And when it isn't the case, it can be a shock to a lot of customers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the attraction. I'm going to go and live 40 Ks from the city because I can buy a 400 square meter block, which doesn't sound that big, but it is these days, and live in a traditional side of home. And then they get out into these outer regions, and that's where the 300 square meter product's being delivered, and it's just a bit of a shock to the system. And I guess the secondary thing is, you know, they just announced another 12 months on the first home buyer scheme, but they didn't lift the cap. So you can't really, it's very hard. There wouldn't be many house and land developers delivering house and land product underneath the cap for a first home buyer to get the first home buyer grant.
Spot on. Yeah, I completely agree. It's super tough for first home buyers out there. And not that I want, you know, that I'm very much of the increasing supply is what mainly matters, but you know, I don't think those sort of programs are going to make massive differences to the supply because of things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, supply is, you know, there's two factors in that price or affordability piece is increasing supply, but also, you know, certainly infrastructure or bureaucratic red tape that drives the price of property up. You know, we've got projects in Burpengary and Bellemere that are, you'd expect Burpengary to be significantly more expensive than Bellemere, for example, but in the long run, they'll probably be similarly priced because of the significant council infrastructure charges that you'll have to pay to get land out of the ground in Bellemere. We're not price gouging by putting the price where it is. That's just, we're setting a minimum margin that we need to make as a business. And after all the costs are involved in bringing that land to market, add our margin on top, and that's the price. And you would expect that price to be lower the further out you go, but it's not the case at the moment.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that price, Andrew. I mean, my view is that, you know, there's a lot out there about our developers, you know, pushing prices and price gouging, but my experience is that it never is the case. It's a very competitive industry, and that developers are out there just making margins required to keep the businesses going rather than pushing prices, you know, that are going to hurt consumers. And I think a lot of that is driven, like you said, by government charges and regulations.
Yeah, look, we're probably getting a little bit into the murky waters of development there. So we'll bring it back to the friendly, you know, talking about wealth creation and talking to our investors. So I guess, where do you see the market in terms of prices heading over the next 12 to 24 months in Southeast Queensland?
Yeah, our fundamental view is that we see price growth continuing, but probably not at the really strong levels we've seen, which is probably what most are expecting for the established market as well. I mean, we had Southeast Queensland price growth of 11% just in the March quarter, you know, even as land sizes held relatively steady. And like I said before, pushing past what we're seeing in Melbourne in terms of how headline land prices. So, you know, in our view, we've got land prices, you know, sort of in the 10 to 15% for 2025, which isn't that big a call when you've seen 10% in one quarter already, easing back to, you know, 5 to 10% in 2026, which is still historically pretty strong numbers in terms of price growth. You know, some mitigation because of losing that affordability advantage compared to Melbourne. But that recent price growth, you know, has really contributed to that. But it's hard to see a significant change or even a fall in price growth when you've got rates being cut by, you know, 1 to 1.5% throughout the cycle.
Yeah, look, I mean, it probably would come as a surprise to some, but it's almost music to my ears to see just a bit of a steady market certainly in my time, there's constantly been a view external to the market that the market's got to be doing something. It's either booming or busting. It can never just be normal. And I think a normal market's where we like to play. That's where we like to operate. So long may it stay normal for 12 to 24 months at least.
Yeah, I think we're the same. We sell. Everyone likes, you know, when you're selling or you're owning, you like price rises. But in terms of a long-term sustainable market, we'd rather just a bit more steady in terms of volumes and sales without the real boom and bust cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, moving on, I guess one of the things on the tip of everyone's tongue is the 2032 Olympics looming large over our economy here in Southeast Queensland. There's a lot of commentary about how that might impact demand for housing in the outer suburbs. Or do you think the impacts will just be confined to the inner suburbs around the major infrastructure that gets delivered as part of those games?
Yeah, it's a good question. There is a lot of newspaper column devoted to what the impact might be. And I agree with what you said. I think it'll be largely, the effect on housing will be largely related to where the infrastructure is built. And by that, I don't mean stadiums and sporting infrastructure. I mean the supporting infrastructure that you know, supports housing, transport, roads, whether it's water or sewer, anything like that. But I don't think it's been proven anywhere that people tend to, you know, move to a city because there's an Olympic event, or even there are significant movements in people, you know, or labour required to deliver the infrastructure. But they will move if there is if there's better housing supplied and better infrastructure supplied. On balance, it's undoubtedly net positive for the state. But, you know, for housing, the effects are second order and not massive. And to be honest, there is some risk that it hurts as well if you see some of those trades and labour being shifted away from housing or housing-related infrastructure, you know, towards some of the bigger sporting-related infrastructure. So we've got to make sure that as a state, we keep focused on delivering, you know, housing. At the same time, we've got these other big projects that need to be delivered by 2032 or prior to it.
Yeah, look, I'd agree. I don't understand why bringing an Olympics to a city would impact or have a direct impact on housing at all, but certainly improved, particularly where I see it probably having the most impact indirectly, is if we have vastly improved transport infrastructure or transport networks and getting around the city or from one side of the city to the other and things like that becomes easier, that'll make it a more attractive place to live. But, you know, your point in terms of trades being redirected to major sporting infrastructure, definitely a risk. And that's probably where some of that might get some, you know, further interstate migration of those trades, because there'll be so much work here in both housing and infrastructure delivery. So, you know, there's intangible benefits.
Yeah, we have seen some of the bigger projects around the country in terms of infrastructure roll off as well, and that's been commented by some big developers. So I agree. You know, in terms of people moving, hopefully it is people to help that capacity in terms of labour to build housing projects, because, to be honest, Southeast Queensland will need it over the next 10 or so years.
So I guess moving back to the nitty-gritty of the property stuff, first home buyers, they have struggled to get into the market with the higher interest rates and obviously the price growth that we've been referring to throughout. To the extent the Queensland government did announce a new range of support, I guess, to help them into the market, how do you see conditions for first home buyers over the coming years?
It is tough. It is as tough for first home buyers as it's been maybe ever. You know, we keep a really close eye on what's happening with affordability. And over the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen that equation really flip from borrowing capacity versus prices, whereas borrowing capacity was plenty, you know, much higher than what a base level house and land entry price might be. Because you've had that house and land price increase, both because of land prices and the construction costs over the last 3 or 4 years, at the same time you've had rates rise, and so you've got that borrowing capacity go down. You know, it's just as tough as it's been for first home buyers. And we see that in the results on our projects that where we sell. You know, everyone's commenting on it. There's some projects in Sydney where it used to be 50 to 75% of first home buyers, now less than 10%. You know, when you're selling on the Gold Coast at million plus house and land, that's certainly not, you know, first home buyer territory. So I think it is tough. Obviously, rate cuts are going to help. It is going to start resetting that equation back to closer where it's achievable for first home buyers. You know, in terms of the initiatives announced by the Queensland government, you know, some of them announced in the budget, some of them were a bit telegraphed beforehand. So obviously the stamp duty exemption is good. I'm always in favour of less stamp duty when it comes to land and property, regardless of who it's targeted at. You know, in terms of the other programs in getting first home buyers in the market by shared equity or lower LMI. That's good, and it will help. It'll help in the short term. It probably won't help in the medium to long term. Those things tend to get, you know, built into prices and pretty quickly. And to be honest, the number of places available in the announced programs wasn't massive when, you know, Queensland needs to deliver 50,000 new dwellings every year to sort of hit their targets. You know, 1,000 new places across the whole market every year is not really going to touch the side. So I'm supportive of it. I think, you know, first home buyers do need to be helped as long as we're doing it at the same time in focusing on policies in increasing supply.
Yeah, look, it's definitely, as a someone that's got four kids, I look at it and think, how are they going to get in there? And, you know, the affordability piece in terms of borrowing capacity, prices, I've always looked at it as a multiple of your income has always been the best measure. And that gap's just getting bigger and bigger. You know, you love talking to the baby boomers. Oh, my interest rate was 18%, but, you know, a house costs four times your wage. Now the houses cost 10 times your wage. So the interest rate is coming down, will increase our borrowing capacity. But obviously the strength of the rental market, the difficulty of getting into even a rental, the rental price increases, it's getting harder and harder to save a deposit. So haven't got a lot of good news for the first home buyers, but hopefully those things, you know, can improve with both industry and government intervention. But I guess those first home buyers, along with any other buyers, are sensitive to interest rates. Those holding mortgages and from all generations still remain sensitive to those rates. Where do you see rates, I guess, heading over the short and medium term?
Yeah, that's a good point, Andrew. And I don't want to underestimate how important rates can be. I mean, I think we typically do tend to underestimate the effect of rates on where prices and volumes go. So I think that there will be a strong effect. I guess our view is that we think the RBA will go again in July by 0.25%. I don't think that's particularly controversial. It's about 90% priced in. You've got some, you know, some major economists sort of changing their views to support that rate cut in July. And there's probably two more cuts by the end of the calendar year, by the end of 2025, you know, to get to five for the year. And I think one more by the middle of next year. So we're going to get to, you know, 1.5 cuts over the cycle, which is pretty significant. I can tell you that I remember being at a conference at the start of the year and there were some, you know, very big hitters in terms of economists forecasting 125 basis rate cut for the whole year. So that changed, you know, both with where I think inflation has gone and global developments as well. You know, inflation is well contained. It's well within the RBA target band, and some of these global risks are pushing that risk further to the downside. You know, and the main risk to the upside, really the only risk, is that we've got a really tight labor market and it's continuing to perform better than the RBA has expected. So, you know, tighter labor market, increased wages, flows through to prices, that's the risk to the upside. But I think most changes in terms of what people are expecting for rates have been that it's going to be a stronger rate cutting cycle than certainly we even thought, you know, 3 or 4 months ago.
Well, that's very good news to all those mortgage holders already in the market. Courtesy of one Matt Bell from Oliver Hume. So you heard it here, probably not first, but you heard it here. And, you know, hopefully, as you said, and part of my question was, hopefully that does have a really positive impact on first home buyers and their ability to get to the market. Because while it is important for all those mortgage holders, particularly those suffering mortgage stress, there are other generations, I guess, the rate cuts just mean they can have a nicer holiday. But for those at the other end of the market, either wanting to hold on to their property or get into the market, those rate cuts will be a very welcome change. So
completely agree. I mean, you know, for us, we think about in ballpark sort of figures, a 25 basis point cut, you know, 15 to 20 grand in terms of increased borrowing capacity. And that makes a massive, massive difference, particularly to first home buyers.
Well, we've probably dragged on a little bit here, so time to wrap it up. Thanks, Matt, for joining us on the Smart Capital Podcast. Hopefully we've given some good insights into the Southeast Queensland market, and a few insights that you may or may not have wanted into what it takes to deliver a project and dealing with councils. But no, I really appreciate the insights from you, Matt, adding a little bit more expertise to my musings. So, you know, thanks for coming on.
Pleasure. Great to join you, Andrew. Great to chat.
Thank you.